Guruna Parchita Shapto
Guruna Parchita Shapto
Jaho Satyam Nasubrita
Jaho Satyam Nasubrita
Shalair Ukto Maya Dharma
Shalair Ukto Maya Dharma
Nayam Tyajati Satyava
Nayam Tyajati Satyava
Although bereft of his riches, fallen from his original position, defeated and arrested by his enemies, rebuked and deserted by his relatives and friends, although suffering the pain of being bound, and although rebuked and cursed by his spiritual master, Vali Maharaj, being fixed in his vow, did not give up his truthfulness. It was certainly his pretension that I spoke about religious principles, but he did not give up religious principles, for he is true to his word. Report by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Vali Maharaj passed the severe test put before him by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is further proof of the Lord's mercy toward his devotee. The Supreme Personality of Godhead sometimes puts a devotee to severe tests that are almost unbearable. One could hardly even live under the conditions forced upon Vali Maharaj. That Vali Maharaj endured all these severe tests and austerities is the mercy of the Supreme Lord. The Lord certainly appreciates the devotee's forbearance, and it is recorded for the future glorification of the devotee. This was not an ordinary test. As described in this verse, hardly anyone could survive such a test. But for the glorification of Vali Maharaj, one of the Mahajans, the Supreme Personality of Godhead not only tested him, but also gave him the strength to tolerate such adversity. The Lord is so kind to his devotee that when severely testing him, the Lord gives him the necessary strength to be tolerant and continue to remain a glorious devotee. His riches, fallen from his original position, defeated and arrested by his enemies, rebuked and deserted by his relatives and friends, although suffering the pain of being bound, and although rebuked and cursed by his spiritual master, Vali Maharaj, being fixed in his vow, did not give up his truthfulness. It was certainly with pretension that I spoke about religious principles, but he did not give up religious principles, for he is true to his word. Today I have been given this verse to speak on. On this most befitting occasion of Sri Vamana Dwadasi, we are hearing the word of Vamana Dev, the great avatar of Vishnu, who is personally speaking in glorification of his devotee, Bali Maharaj. When the Lord descends into this world, he comes for the purpose of establishing true religious principles. And it is through his devotees that this is accomplished. When Matsyavatar appeared, he came to establish the greatness and the glory of Maharaj Satyavrat and the level of his devotion and compassion to other living beings. When Narasimhadev appeared, he came to show the true religious principles through his devotee Prahlad Maharaj. As Ramchandra, through Maharaj Guha, through Hanumanji, through Jatayu, he revealed the essence of religion. When Krishna appeared, through the gopas and gopis of Braja, through Arjuna in Kurukshetra, he revealed true religion. So when the Lord appears, he appears with his entourage of his associates, and through them he establishes the quality of surrender that everyone should strive to achieve. And such devotee becomes so dear to the Lord that the Lord himself is indebted, obligated, and anxious to glorify such a devotee. Here we find the story of Bali Maharaj. He was a descendant of Prahlad. He was a very great devotee. But his occupational duty was that he was the king of the demons. And so powerful he was as the king. And how did he gain his power? By pleasing the Brahmins. By performing the proper sacrifice and charity to give pleasure to the Brahmins. When you please the great souls and they bestow your blessings upon you, then you become endowed with great, great opulence. At the time, Indra, who was actually the king of heaven, he offended Brihaspati. Brihaspati is the guru of the devatas. But somehow or other, we were speaking of Indra last night also. He's actually a great devotee. He's one of the greatest devotees. But Krishna uses him to reveal so many of the pitfalls that we should be careful not to fall into. Sometimes Krishna even puts his devotee in the most embarrassing situations just to teach us what we should not do. As it is explained, Srila Prabhupada told us the Bengali proverb that when the mother wants to teach her daughter-in-law, she teaches through the daughter. Because the daughter-in-law is new to the house. If the mother chastises the daughter-in-law, she may feel very uncomfortable and very difficult. So even though the daughter knows everything, the mother will chastise the daughter for what the daughter-in-law is doing wrong. And in this way, the daughter-in-law learns, and the daughter accepts all the blame, even though she's not to blame at all. She's just being utilized by the mother out of compassion for the daughter-in-law. Anyways, I don't know if mothers are so compassionate to their daughters-in-laws in this day and age, but this was the system of the past. In the same way, when Krishna wants to instruct the conditioned fallen souls, he does it through his devotees. So Indra was sitting on his throne with his beautiful queen, Sachi Devi, beside him, and the various devatas were chanting his praises and glories as the King of Heaven in his beautiful, beautiful palace, Swargaloka, with the surroundings of the Nandana Gardens, which has the very unique and extraordinarily rare Parijata trees. And while he was in the midst of getting so much nice puja offered to him, his guru came, Brihaspati. And he was so infatuated and distracted by glorification to him that he did not see the reason why he should make any efforts to welcome his guru. He did nothing. He just sat there. And Brihaspati understood that because of his false pride, he is not respecting a great soul, he will lose everything. Brihaspati understood. He didn't curse him. He just remained silent. He knew through his transcendental vision what the outcome would be. And sure enough, because he displeased a great Brahman, Indra lost all of his power and potency. Hare Krishna. A confirmation from the Supreme. But because Bali Maharaj, he was humbly serving the Brahmins, and he was pleasing them, he got tremendous Brahma Tejas, tremendous strength. So Bali Maharaj marched into Swargaloka, and Indra, he began to inquire, what to do? What shall I do? And he was told that there's nothing you can do except run for your life, because you cannot stand before him. He has the blessings of the great souls behind him. So nothing can stop him. It is only when he offends a great soul that anything, that he will be fallible and he can be subjected to the punishment of the laws of nature. So Indra and all the devatas, they didn't even fight. They just ran away and began to hide in various disguises in different parts of the universe. Meanwhile, Bali Maharaj conquered everything. And Aditi, and who is the mother of the demigods, and the demigods, they all began to pray to the Supreme Lord Vishnu to save them. Because actually what Bali Maharaj did is he took away their service to the Lord. Because their service is to manage the universal affairs for Krishna. So the Lord agreed, and he took birth as the son of Aditi and Kashyapa Muni. And he appeared in an extraordinary form. And today we are celebrating the particular festival of the appearance of Lord Vamanadeva. He appeared as a beautiful little dwarf with a golden complexion. And he was given the deer skin to wear because he was the son of a Brahmin, Kashyapa Muni. And the various devatas came to offer him so many gifts. Brahma gave him a kamandalu, a water pot. Someone else gave him kushi grass. Someone else gave him a stick. In this way, he was given the sacred thread. And then he went with his begging bowl to the place where Bali Maharaj was performing a great, great, great yajna. And Bali Maharaj saw a Brahmin who was coming with begging bowl, and he was very charitable. He said, "What would you like? You have come to me, and I will give you anything you like. I am the proprietor of all the three worlds." So Vamanadeva replied that, "I would like 3 steps of land." And Bali could not understand, why only 3 steps of land? There is a saying that if you go to a big person, you should ask for something big. You don't go to Mr. Birla or Mr. Tata or Mr. Rockefeller and ask for 10 paisa. You can go to anybody and ask for 10 paisa. When you go to these people, they're expecting you to ask for crores and crores of rupees. Otherwise, it's below their dignity to even discuss 10 paisa. Well, anyways, Rockefellers, Birlas, and Tatas, they're little insects compared to what Bali Maharaj was. He was the controller of the universe. So he told little Vamanadeva that, why 3 steps of land? I can give you anything you like. I can give you entire continents, entire nations, entire planets, anything. Just ask me. I'm in a charitable mood. At the time of a yajna, it's very auspicious to give charity to a Brahmin. He wanted to give something nice. And then Vamanadeva chastised him. He said, "What nonsense are you talking?" He said, "You just see that you are the proprietor of the universe. You have so much wealth, you have so much power, you have so much subjugation over others, and you are not happy. You have no peace of mind. So what is the use of all of your great wealth and opulence? But as for me, you see, I don't own anything. I just have my little begging bowl and stick. I don't have a second pair of clothes. I have no property or inheritance in my name. But I am perfectly satisfied. I'm happy because I'm happy within my heart." If one is happy within his own heart, self-satisfied, one is blissful in any situation in life. But if one is not satisfied within his own heart, one cannot be satisfied no matter what arrangements are made in the world. Whether he's a beggar on the street or whether he's the conqueror of the whole universe, he will never find happiness in life. Because happiness doesn't come from outside of ourselves. Happiness is the basic nature of our soul. And when we experience that happiness, we are happy in all situations. And if we do not have that, we are poverty stricken. As far as Vamanadeva was concerned, although he was coming with a begging bowl and it was empty, he considered that, "I am a great wealthy person." And Bali Maharaj, who had just stocks and stocks of food grains and gold and jewels and palaces, this man is in poverty. Because he has not found the wealth of inner peace. So Vamanadeva explained that, "I am satisfied with 3 steps. And what was the size of his steps? The Lord specifically came in the form of a dwarf, very tiny, perhaps half the size of Radhesham. Very small size. Especially just so that his steps would be very small. He said, "This is all I require." At that time, Shukracharya, who was the caste guru of the Asuras, he was not a bona fide guru. There are so many family gurus. Sometimes they're bona fide and sometimes they're not at all. So he was the guru of the family. He was not coming in an authorized parampara. He was not repeating the words of Godhead. Rather, he was speaking whatever was best suited for his own material welfare. Sometimes so-called gurus speak like this. What they really want is not to give you transcendental knowledge, but to get your money and to get your support on every way. And they'll tell you whatever is required to get that support. They will adjust the philosophy. They will adjust the truth in such a way to suit their own material requirements. So he understood that Vamana Dev was actually Vishnu. And Vishnu had come on the request of the Devatas. And he was going to take away everything. And if the Lord takes away everything from the disciple, then what kind of bakshish can he give the guru? What kind of dakshin? Huh? There'll be nothing for the Shukracharya if Bali has nothing. And he wants the support of such a disciple who's the king of the universe. So he told Bali, do not give him anything. He has come to cheat you. He's a big cheater. He's Vishnu. He's the Supreme Lord. And he's the friend of the demigods. And he's come to take everything away from you, so you do not give him anything. When Bali Maharaj heard this, he said, "What is this nonsense? You are my guru and you are telling me not to surrender to Vishnu? The purpose of guru is to teach me how to surrender to Vishnu. Therefore, you are bogus guru. You get out." So in this way, Bali Maharaj taught us that if whatever one has relationship with some guru due to family ties, if they are teaching something contrary to pure devotional service, they should be rejected, with all respect. He respectfully rejected him. And Shukracharya became very angry. He said, "You are not following my order, therefore I curse you, you will lose everything." And Bali Maharaj was completely detached from all of this. So then he told Vamanadeva, "Now you take your three steps." But then right before his eyes, a great wonder was revealed. This little tiny dwarf began to expand in size. Mahato Mahiyan Anato Aniyan. Krishna is bigger than the biggest, smaller than the smallest, as per his desire. There is no limitation to what Krishna can do. So he began to grow. And how did he grow? He grew so big that he covered all the sky. And then he began to take his steps. And with his first step, He began from below Patala Loka, the lowest planets. And with one step, he covered all the way from the lower planets through the middle planets. And with his second step, he covered all the way to the topmost part of the higher planets. In other words, the first step, he covered half the universe, and the second step, he covered the other half of the universe. In fact, when his second step touched the end of the universe, it pierced that covering between material and spiritual existence. And the causal ocean, which is outside of this universe, because the universes are all floating in the causal ocean, it began to drip through the crack that was made by his lotus foot. And it washed his foot. And then it came into the higher planets, and that was the way the river Ganges came into this universe, through Vamanadeva, Bhagwan's wonderful, wonderful pastime. But then Vamanadeva told Bali that I have taken two steps, and you promised me three. So now what? You have nothing else to give me. That means you have told a lie, and you are punishable. And then Bali Maharaj was arrested. He was tied with ropes. And here all of his wife, Vidya Bali was her name, and all of his servants, the demons, and all of his ministers, everyone that was so much worshiping him as the Supreme, right in front of all of them, he was tied with ropes, and he was a prisoner, and he had nothing left. He had lost everything. He was in poverty by all material standards. And he was also being brought to court. He was brought to the court, and Vamanadeva was the judge. That you have given your word and you are not keeping. You promised three steps. And at that time, Vindhyavali, his wife, she began to preach to him that you thought that you were the proprietor of so many things, but actually it is all an illusion. Everything is the property of the Lord. And then Prahlad Maharaj, who was his grandfather, he appeared. And he began to say, this is glorious. This is the mercy of the Lord. And everyone was praising what a good fortune he was being given. And Vamanadeva said, now you promised me three steps. Where shall I place the third? And Bali Maharaj said, my Lord, I have already given you all my property. The only thing that's left to give you is my life. So place your third step on top of my head. In other words, he surrenders everything. Atmanivedanam. And Vamanadeva in these verses is speaking. How wonderful it is that he was tested in such a way by the will of the Lord. And because he was sincere to maintain his word to the Lord also gave him the power to pass those tests. And this is very important. When we come to the spiritual path, when we accept initiation or diksha, we actually take a vow. We take a vow before our guru, before the assembled Vaishnavas, before the Supreme Lord who appears in the sacred fire, and before the Lord who is appearing within the deity and within his holy name. You're making a vow. Now, one should never give up one's vow before God. This was Bali Maharaj's greatness. And because he was sincere to do so, even though so many tests came, which gave him the opportunity to justify breaking his vow, he did not do so. Imagine what he went through. Vamanadev here is glorifying him. If his Sukracharya gave him all facility to go back on his word. And then, just to maintain his word, he endured such humiliation. He was bound with ropes. He was arrested by his enemies. He was rebuked and deserted by his relatives and friends. Does this sound familiar to anybody? Being rebuked and deserted by his relatives and friends. He was suffering the pain of being bound by ropes. He was rebuked and cursed by his family spiritual master. What Bali Maharaj went through was more painful than death itself. But yet, he was not going to give up his vows. He made his vow before the Lord, and he was going to stick with it. And because he had that sincere desire, the Lord himself empowered him to maintain and preserve his word and his spiritual integrity. Otherwise, in the face of such insurmountable opposition, no human being, not even the demigods or the greatest of the Rakshasas, could possibly withstand unless they have the mercy of the Lord. It was the mercy of the Lord that sustained him, because he was sincere, because he was determined. Krishna says in Gita, Ananyas chintayanto mam ye jana paryupashate tesham nitya biyuktanam yogakshemam bahamyam. That if one is sincere to surrender to me, then I will preserve what you have and I will carry what you lack. Whatever shortcomings you may have to pass the tests that come to you, I will give you the strength to pass that test. Krishna's giving the test, and Krishna's giving the power to pass the test. Krishna's wonderful. He is doing it all for the purification and the elevation of his devotee. This is his glory. And Prahlad Maharaj, who was also within the family ancestry of Bali, just see what kinds of tests he had to pass. Within the womb of his mother, he accepted his vows to Narada Muni. Narada Muni spoke, and it was in an informal way, but still, he resolved that I will accept the word of Narada Muni as my life and soul. And Narada Muni told him that you should always hear and chant the glories of the Lord under all circumstances. And what kind of test Prahlad was put into? Very similar to Bali Maharaj. But he was only a 5-year-old child. And his father was the king of the universe. He was a terrible demon. Bali Maharaj was a descendant of Prahlad, but he was also a descendant of Hiranyakashipu. So he had a very unique family tree. And he was also a descendant of Hiranyaksha. So Hiranyakashipu offered Prahlad, you just stop this chanting of Hare Krishna. You just stop preaching this Harikatha, and you are my eldest son. You will be the king of the universe. You will get everything. You just do as I say. If you do not do what I say, then I will torture you and destroy you. Those are your two choices. If you were given those two choices, think carefully. What would you choose? If you remain a devotee and preach actively, then you will be tortured and killed and you will get everything taken away, and you will be cursed and blasphemed and persecuted. And if you just keep it to yourself and just behave according to the status quo of society, you will get all the riches, the power, and the fame of the King of the Universe. Are you all thinking about this? If you had these two choices? Well, Prahlad didn't even think about it. There was nothing to think about. As far as he was concerned, he understood what his relationship was to his Guru Maharaj, Narada Muni, and to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So he told his father, Itvatma patam grihamanda kupam, that you, father, you are an illusion. You are a demon. You are in the dark, deep well of family attachment. And you should give it all up and you should go to Vrindavan and worship Krishna. That is my advice to you, father. He was very bold. 5-year-old. He had no one to help him. It's not that he had a gang of friends that were going to. He was all alone. And the whole Rakshasa dynasty was against him. He didn't even attempt to escape. And he was thrown into oceans and thrown under elephants and thrown in fire. And he was thrown in pits of venomous serpents, and he was stabbed by tridents and spears and swords, and he was fed deadly poison. What kind of tests he went through to maintain his sincerity for Krishna consciousness. But he saw that Krishna is putting me through these tests, and if I am sincere, Krishna will give me the strength to pass these tests. So he had no fear. And because of sincerity, Krishna helped him to pass all of these most impossible tests. So Prahlad Maharaj came to tell Bali Maharaj, you just remain Krishna conscious. This will be your glory. So when we take to devotional service, we should know that many tests will come. And we should not think that this test is coming from just people of this material world. They are all coming from Krishna. And Krishna is utilizing so many of his own facilities, either through the Daivi Shakti or the Maya Shakti. He is like a chess player. Have any of you played chess? When I was a little boy, I used to watch people playing chess. And their minds are really straining to just figure out these secret strategies to somehow defeat the other person. It's a very intellectual game. In fact, there's one devotee I know. His name is Jai Krishna. He has come to India. He was one of the world's greatest chess players. And the poor person, for him, life is a chess game. And anything that happens, even the slightest thing like putting on his clothes, he has to just think about the repercussions. If I move this piece of clothing here, what will happen there? Completely absorbed in just intellectually analyzing every aspect of his life. Whatever I speak, whatever I say, whatever I do, how will it affect this, and how will it affect that person there, and how will it affect that situation there, and what will be the result, and what might come back to me. And in this way, he's actually usually in anxiety about things because he's so intellectualizing everything. So this is the way chess is. You just mobilize everything with a strategy. And the strategy is to capture the king. Yes? So in the same way for a devotee, he arranges the whole world as a chessboard around this devotee. And the king is the soul. Right? The king is the soul of the chess game. So similarly, Krishna is organizing everything in a very nice strategic way to capture your soul by attracting it to his loving service. So all the tests that come are actually arranged by Krishna. And we have the choice whether we pass the test or fail the test. Sometimes through material arrangements, sometimes through too much heat or too much cold or too much pollution, how will I go on with my vows of Krishna consciousness in these situations? Sometimes there may be droughts, sometimes there may be floods. Sometimes people will oppose your Krishna consciousness. Sometimes the people in general in society. If you're going to college, so many of your classmates will ridicule you. They will make fun of you. They will make so many jokes against you. They will make you the topic of their wrath or humor. I know what kind of jokes they make about devotees in the American colleges. Very terrible. But devotees, they just understand this is a test. Krishna is speaking through these people just to see what kind of devotion I have. And if I pass, I make advancement. And if I fail, I lose the chance. And sometimes when we're working in some occupation, other colleagues or other people from other companies, they start saying all bad things against us. Or sometimes our own family members start saying all bad things against us. Or sometimes even our god brothers and god sisters and people in the temple say all bad things about us. They start accusing why you are like this. And even rumors and gossip starts coming against you. And you think, what is this? Of course, we should not think that if we want to gossip somebody, that Krishna is speaking through me. just to purify this person, because I'm so merciful, I'm so compassionate, I'm so concerned that this person goes back to Godhead, I will let Krishna just make so many blasphemies and rumors and gossips against this person. Naturally, from that person's point of view, he should think Krishna is speaking through. But the fact that you're doing it means you have to get all the reactions. So you should not do it. A Vaishnav will never offend another. Never. He will die before offending another person. But when somebody else offends him, he will think, oh, Krishna is so mercifully purifying me through this agent. That is the inconceivable psychology within the heart of a devotee. So, in so many ways, there will be so many reasons to become disheartened, to give up our faith, to give up our perseverance, to give up our vows before the Lord. And Bali Maharaj was actually taking the part of all of us to show us what we should be willing to withstand to maintain the honor of our Krishna consciousness. And if you are willing to just give everything you have to pass the test, Krishna will give you the strength to pass every test, whatever it may be. You simply have to be sincere and give everything within your power to remain truthful and honorable, and Krishna will provide all the strength to do so. And that is an eternal truth. Kaunteya pratijanihi na me bhakta pranashyati. Krishna says, I will never abandon my devotee. I will always protect my devotee. I will always protect my devotee's word, my devotee's integrity, if that devotee is willing to give everything within his power for me. Just like the sparrow, when her eggs were washed by the ocean, the sparrow vowed, I will dry up the ocean unless she gives me, unless I get my eggs back. So the sparrow was determined. And one drop at a time, he was trying to dry the ocean. Now what is the possibility within the lifetime of a sparrow, one little drop at a time, that it's going to dry up the ocean? But because of its sincerity, because of its determination, because that mother was so much thinking in terms of protecting her children, that she was willing to give everything within her life to do the needful. Garuda, the representative of Krishna, came and actually himself told Ocean, I will dry you up. And then the ocean came and said, here are the eggs. So those eggs, we could say, represent our very life source, our soul, our devotion to God. And the purpose of our life. And if we let the ocean of material existence with all the various waves that she sends to take those eggs, then we lose them forever. We lose our devotional service. We lose the very source of our life. But we have to have that determination to do everything we can to protect that great gift Krishna has given us. And if we do, Krishna will protect. So Bali Maharaj passed every test, the most severe, the most humiliating, the most painful. It is said in Bhagavad Gita, for a Kshatriya especially, for one who is honored, dishonor is worse than death. And who is honored more than Bali Maharaj? He was the king of the world, and he was a Kshatriya. He had the greatest honor, and now all of a sudden he was being given the most terrible, unbelievable dishonor. He went from the king to a poverty-stricken prisoner. But he was happy. He said, my Lord, I am very happy. Just put your foot on my head. Whatever's left that I have, which is my own ego, I'm offering it to you. I am surrendered. And through this, Bali Maharaj became famous as the example of Atmanivedanam. There are 9 processes of devotional service. Shravana, hearing. Maharaj Parikshit perfected his life through the process of just hearing about Krishna attentively from a bona fide guru, Shukadeva Goswami. Kirtanam, chanting. Shukadeva Goswami perfected his life simply by chanting the names and glories of the Lord. Smaranam. Prahlad Maharaj perfected his life by always remembering Krishna under any circumstance. Bandhanam, offering prayers. Akura, he perfected his life simply by offering heartfelt, sincere prayers at the lotus feet of Krishna. Padasevanam, worshipping the lotus feet. Lakshmi Devi perfected her life by always serving the lotus feet of Narayan. Dasyam, Hanumanji perfected his life by always carrying out the order of Ram obediently as his servant. Archanam, Ambarish Maharaj perfected his life by very carefully worshipping the deity according to the proper devotional standards. Arjuna perfected his life by being the intimate loving friend of the Lord. And Atmanivedanam, Bali Maharaj is glorified for all eternity as the great Mahajan who perfected his life by surrendering everything. His body, his mind, his words, his ego, all of his possessions, everything he gave to the Lord. And due to this gesture, Vamanadeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is so pleased with him that he is personally speaking through the Srimad Bhagavatam to the whole world to glorify Bali Maharaj. Not only that, He was so overwhelmed with appreciation for Bali's devotion, humility, and surrender that Vamanadeva agreed to become the servant of Bali Maharaj. He gave Bali Maharaj the planet of what is Sutala. And he gave him the kingship of that planet, which was greater than the heavenly planets. Even though it was a lower planet, Vamanadeva made it more opulent, luxurious, and wonderful than the heavenly planets. And Vamanadeva himself agreed to become the doorkeeper to assist Bali Maharaj. Krishna is always anxious to be the servant of his devotees. Just like to Arjuna, Krishna, because of Arjuna's pure love and surrender, Arjuna agreed to be his chariot driver, his menial servant. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to his devotees, sometimes he would wash their feet, sometimes he would wash their clothes. Sometimes he would carry the loads they were taking from one place to another. Lord Chaitanya became the servant of his devotees. Krishna became the servant of his devotees. When the gopis would say, dance, Krishna would dance. When Mother Yashoda would say, bring my sitting place, Krishna would bring her sitting place. When Nanda Maharaj would say, bring my shoes, he would bring his shoes on his head. He would bring his father's shoes on his head. It is Krishna's ultimate pleasure in his existence to be overcome, to be conquered, to be the servant of the pure love of his devotees. So he became the doorkeeper for Bali Maharaj. And there's a beautiful story how in Vaikuntha, Lakshmi was wondering, where is Vishnu? Where is he? He incarnated and it's past his scheduled time to return. So she asked Narada Muni, where is my Lord? She said, actually, Bali Maharaj's love and surrender conquered him so much that now he's living in Sutala Loka, in a lower planet, as Bali Maharaj's doorkeeper. So Lakshmi wanted to get him back. So she is supremely clever. So Bali Maharaj, in his kingdom, he was so accommodating that at a certain time of the day, he would allow any citizen to come personally and directly before him with whatever complaints or desires they may have, and he would fulfill them. So every day there was a line of people that would come. And of course he ruled his kingdom in such pure devotional service and God consciousness that actually everyone was satisfied. But if there was any complaints or if anybody had any desires that were not fulfilled, they would come to him. Or sometimes they would just come and thank him. But everyone was welcome. He was so completely accessible to his citizens. Why? Because the king is supposed to feel himself the servant of the citizens, not the master of the citizens. The father and mother should be the servant of the family, not the master. The guru should be the servant of the disciples, not the master. Everyone is servant in Krishna consciousness. So he would serve his citizens, and because he had such a loving mood to do anything, give his life for his citizens, they would give their life for him. And that is the reciprocation of love. So Lakshmi disguised herself as a very old lady. And she got there at the beginning, but she let everyone go ahead of her. Because she knew Bali Maharaj, he recognizes virtues in people. You see, if you want to impress a seasoned advanced devotee, if you start telling them about all the wonderful things you're doing, they will not be impressed. But if you're very humble, they will be impressed. Of course, if they ask you what you're doing, you should tell them all the wonderful things you're doing. But you shouldn't be boasting like that. And when we tell them, we should explain it in such a way that it is not me, it is the mercy of the Vaishnavas that I can do anything. So Bali Maharaj was meeting everybody, and he was watching this old poor lady. She was just letting everyone go in front of her throughout the day. And he was taking note of this. She's very humble. So many people are standing. You know how it is in India, where everyone's trying to get to the front of the line. But she was trying to stay in the back of the line so that everyone would get to meet the king before her. So he was very impressed. And by the end of the day, everyone had gone, and he saw she was just very patiently, humbly waiting. And she said, and he said to her, that, oh, you please come forward. What benediction would you like? And she said, the benediction I would like is send my husband back home. My husband is your doorkeeper, Vamanadeva, and I am Lakshmi Devi. And I am lonely in Vaikuntha without Vamanadeva. So please send him home. Because Lakshmi said, you are his devotee, you have surrendered everything, Atmanivedanam. Therefore, he will never give up your service. He will never go away unless you give him permission, unless you tell him to do so. That is the nature of the love of the Lord for his devotee. So Bali Maharaj didn't know what to do. Because on one hand, he could not go against the goddess of fortune, because she is the supreme devotee of the Lord. On the other hand, how to live in separation from the Lord, who was always, he was having his darshan throughout the day and throughout the night. How to give up such an opportunity, such a blessing, such a service. So he was very much without words to speak. So Vamanadeva, he came, and he understood that there was another test that Bali Maharaj was going through. He did everything for the Lord, and now Lakshmi was about to take him away. So ultimately, Bali Maharaj was willing to give, yes, you should go with Lakshmi. He was willing to even sacrifice that. But the Lord likes to satisfy all his devotees. So he decided that I will go back with Lakshmi in Vaikuntha, but I will expand myself in such a way that this beautiful dwarf form always remains here with you in Sutala Loka. So I will be in both places simultaneously, so everyone is happy. This is the Lord's greatness. We cannot do that. When I went to take sannyas, my parents said, please stay home. If I was the Lord, I could stay home and at the same time take sannyas. Shukadeva Goswami did that. Vedavyas was saying, you cannot leave. You're going to be a avaduta. You stay home with me. So Shukadeva said yes, and he expanded himself. And the illusory Shukadeva stayed home with Vedavyas and actually got married and had children. Did you know that? The ninth canto of Bhagavatam explains. And the original Shukadeva, he didn't bother with such things. He just went everywhere chanting the glories of the Lord. So the Lord can do this, and sometimes he can empower his devotees. But as far as we go, for us, to make one person happy, you have to make another person sad. That's the way this world is. What can you do? If you're a devotee, you'll make non-devotees unhappy. If you're a non-devotee, you'll make devotees unhappy. So what to do? We have to live by the truth. Amani ma manadena kirataniya sada. We should respect everyone, but we should live by the truth. And if we do so, Krishna, he will give us the eternal treasure of real transcendental life in devotion. So Vamanadev expanded himself and went back to Vaikuntha, and simultaneously he remains always the doorkeeper, giving his beautiful, beautiful darshan and giving his wonderful mercy to Bali Maharaj. So we should know, as Rupa Goswami has said, that whatever it takes to be Krishna conscious, whatever you have to give, whatever you have to do, do it. It is worth it, because you will gain millions and millions and millions, and infinitely more you will gain if you surrender to Krishna. And that is the beautiful moral of the story of Sri Vamanadeva. And this day is especially empowered by Lord Vamanadeva. These holy days are like deities. This day is actually none different than Vamanadeva. And by remembering this pastime, and by glorifying this pastime, we can make great, great spiritual progress, and we can get the mercy of Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yes.
Is there any questions? Yes? How could we call him a demon? We do not call him a demon. He was the king of the demons, but he was not a demon. Arivo. Because he was king of the demons. But he wasn't a demon. He took the post, but he was a great devotee. He was obligated. Even Prahlad was king of the demons. And both Prahlad and Bali Maharaj are both two of the 12 Mahajans, the highest authorities of spiritual truths. But they inherited their kingdom from their fathers. So they were both kings of the demons. But they were of the topmost class of pure, unalloyed, humble devotees. Arivo. Yes? I'll give you an example. This is a very crude example. It's so crude that I won't even say it. But I'll say it anyway. It's not exactly a replica. But when Rajiv Gandhi was Prime Minister, he's considered the king of the country, right? Prime Minister. And his wife was Sonia Gandhi. Is she Indian? She was Italian? So she was not Indian, but she was the queen of the Indians. She's the first lady of India, but she's not even Indian. So what is it? It's not really what she is, but it is her post. So it's crude example, but similar. Prahlad Maharaj was the king of the demons by his post, but in his heart he was not a demon. Bali Maharaj, they were the best devotees. And even in their post of being king of the demons, they did it all in the service of Lord Krishna.
Bali Maharaj actively fought against the demigods also. We see the case of Prahlad Maharaj, he was also in the family of demons, but we don't see him fighting against devotees like King Rama. How do we justify his actions?
It is not for you to justify his actions.
Do you understand?
He was acting according to the will of the Lord. After all, if he didn't do it, the Lord would have never incarnated as Vamanadev, and there would be no Vamana Dwadasi. And Jayadev Goswami would have nobody to sing about in his Das Avatar. So it was all part of the plan to bring about the coming of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was assisting in that affair. You may ask, if Vasudev and Devaki knew that they were living in prison, why would they have children if they knew that they would all be killed? Because they understood their eighth child was going to be Krishna, so we have to do whatever is necessary to bring Krishna down. Similarly, Narada Muni. Narada Muni is a great devotee of the Lord. Why did he go to Kamsa and tell Kamsa, you shouldn't let Vasudeva and Devaki go, because actually I know the secret. The secret is that not only is Vishnu appearing, but he's sending all the demigods also. And any one of them could be born, so you should be killing all these children. Why did Narada Muni do that? Because he knew that this is what was required to bring the Lord to the world. Even though he acted very mysteriously. So Bali Maharaj, knowingly or unknowingly, he was being used by Krishna to create the stage by which the demigods would learn a good lesson to be detached from their material opulences, and at the same time that they would take shelter of the Lord and induce the Lord to come, to appear in this most wonderful, glorious, and merciful incarnation.
When you speak, everybody feels that he should never stop.
You are saying like this, but others are becoming hungry. Yes? Jai Devta. The deepest meaning is he wanted to show the glory of Bali Maharaj. After those two steps, he put Bali Maharaj in the most humiliating condition a man could possibly go through. Most people would commit suicide after those first two steps. In America, when the stock market broke in the early 20th century, and there was the Depression, thousands of rich people were jumping off buildings, jumping off bridges, shooting guns in their heads, taking poison, because after having so much fame, distinction, wealth, power, comforts, how can we live without it? They went from millionaires to paupers within a day. It's very difficult. Srila Prabhupada tells a story how when Mohandas Gandhi announced this non-participation with the British government, he actually ordered that all the Indians who have highly respected, high paid posts under the British government should resign. And he tells the story of one person. He had very high post, and he was getting big money, so many rupees. And when he resigned, he was given by the Indian alternative government, Congress, he was given just a basic salary to survive. That's all they had to give him. Within 1 year, he died. He could not live without these luxuries. He became so attached to them. He was in so much frustration and anxiety that he died. It's too much. What to speak of when you're praised and glorified by everyone, and then everyone's cursing you and blaming you and disgusted with you? Bali Maharaj was being praised by everyone. But after everything was taken away and he was a prisoner, all those people were cursing him and criticizing him and rebuking him and condemning him, everyone, the world. He had nobody saying any nice thing about him. At the very end, Prahlad Maharaj came and encouraged him. But before that, everyone rejected him. Is that not a painful test? What to speak if he was the king of everything? He performed years and years and years of tapasya and yajna and fighting And finally, he conquered the universe, and he lost it all within a second. He had nothing. He had no place to sleep. If someone like in this room lost their house and had nowhere to stay, it would be very difficult to go on living, would it not? What to speak? You have family and children. Bali Maharaj had family and children. He lost his home. He lost everything. From a palace to nothing. Very painful. Put yourself in his position. It's impossible to even imagine what he endured. But he remained true to his word. All he had to do was say, "No, I changed my mind." And he would have lost nothing. Because Bhamana Dev was coming as a beggar. But after he made his word, he kept it under so much difficulty. So why did Bhamana Dev do this? Tie him up and arrest him? Because that's where the true humiliation and test came. To see him as an ordinary prisoner. And in this way, Vamana Dev did it, just to show the supreme glory of the faith, the devotion of Bali Maharaj. To make him famous throughout all history, for all the time of the world. This happened millions of years ago, and we are still discussing the glories of Bali Maharaj. If he wasn't tied up, and he didn't offer his head for the feet of Vamana Dev, he would have been forgotten millions of years ago. But by remembering Bali Maharaj, our hearts become pure. By remembering the devotional service of Bali Maharaj, we achieve Krishna consciousness. So Krishna did it to glorify Bali, to show the greatness of such a devotee, and ultimately he did it for the welfare of you and me. Because of his love and mercy toward us, he has exhibited the pastimes of such a devotee. Does that answer your question? Yes. He didn't ask him. He only asked that the Lord would always allow him to serve, and that he could always see the beautiful form of the Lord. This was the benediction he wanted, that he would never forget Krishna. And Krishna, in order to facilitate that he would never forget him, lived with him. Yes? He lived personally with him. Not only for the pleasure of Bali, but for the pleasure of Vamanadev. Vamanadev cannot give up the association of such a devotee. Any other questions? Yes, Padre Narayan Prabhu.
Sometimes, what happens is we try to be pretending, like,
His question is that when devotees go out to preach, they pretend to be very advanced and learned. He's saying himself, but actually he's talking about me. When the mother wants to correct the daughter, chastises the daughter. He knows that publicly my ego could not bear such an accusation. But actually he's talking about me. That sometimes we pretend to be very great souls, very advanced, very learned, and we preach as we're authorities, but in our hearts we know we are insignificant. Is that your question? So what to do? that what you're asking? What to do?
How to be in proper consciousness.
How to be in proper consciousness.
Oh. When we are dealing with juniors.
When you're dealing with juniors. The proper consciousness is to understand that whatever you are giving them is not yours. That is the greatest illusion. What you are giving them is Krishna's. You are just the postman. You are just the messenger delivering the message. And that person, however junior, is actually your Prabhu, your master. And your service to your master is to deliver the message of Krishna. If the postman comes to deliver you 1 crore of rupees from your father, the postman doesn't say, "Bow down to me, because I am giving you 1 crore of rupees, because I am merciful." The postman may say that, but he shouldn't say that. It's unlawful. Because he's simply delivering. The mercy is coming from the Father. He never claims proprietorship over the gift that he is giving. So similarly, whatever knowledge you may have, it's not your knowledge, it's Krishna's knowledge, coming through disciplic succession. You're just delivering it as a service to that person. You are just an instrument. If a doctor is performing a surgery and he has a surgical instrument, the surgical instrument does not think, "I am so wonderful." The surgical instrument is thinking, "The doctor is so wonderful. All I have to do is just cooperate with him and I can heal this person." But if the surgical instrument jumps out of the hand of the doctor and starts trying to stab the patient on his own, what will happen? It will just be a mess. Similarly, when a disciple thinks that I will do on my own what's good, then he just creates a mess. But if a disciple feels that I am just the instrument in the hands of my guru, who is an instrument in the hands of his guru, who is ultimately all instruments in the hands of Krishna, if I just do whatever they want me to do as their instruments, they, Krishna, my guru, they can cure this person's disease using me. But I cannot cure anyone's disease. When there's a successful operation, nobody gives their rupees to the knife. They give to the doctor. Yes. So we should be thinking like this, that the glory is not ours. The glory is those great souls who are utilizing me. And if you have that consciousness, you can always remain a humble servant, and you can render the highest service, which is to preach and to enlighten others in Krishna consciousness. Yes? This is a private question. It is not a public question. There are relative truths and absolute truths. And sometimes in pursuance of the absolute truth, there may have to be some adjustments in the relative truths. But there can never be an adjustment in the absolute truth. In order to serve the purpose, if we adjust the absolute truth to serve the purpose of a relative truth, then we lose everything. But in this material world, we may have to adjust according to time and place certain relative truths in order to pursue and fulfill the necessities of the Absolute Truth, then that is not against truth. It is actually a higher cause. Just like Srila Prabhupada used the example, if the child is sick and is going to die, and the parent wants to give the child medicine, but the child doesn't like the taste of the medicine. So the child says, no, I will not eat this medicine. So stubborn, crazy. And the parent says, you will die if you do not take this medicine. And the child says, I will not take the medicine. So what is the parent to do? So sometimes the parent will take the medicine and grind it into powder and mix it with a laddu. And the parent says, now I want to give you something. Don't give me medicine. This is not medicine, this is laddu. Just eat the laddu. So the child eats the laddu. And the child's life is saved. So is she a liar? Will she go to hell for being a liar? To pursue the higher truths, she adjusted a relative truth to save the life of the child. So that is not considered dishonest. Rather, it would be more dishonest if she said, well, I cannot lie, and if I put the medicine in laddu, then it's not truthful, so let my son die. That is, no one will appreciate such a mother. Does that answer your question? Yes? In Kali Yuga, the most important process is chanting the holy names, hearing from the learned sages, and chanting the holy names of the Lord. We can practice the others, but ultimately in Kali Yuga, it is only through perfecting our chanting that we can achieve the ultimate goal of life. The other processes in Kali Yuga support the process of chanting the holy names. Is there any other questions? Yes?
Is everything predecided? Whatever is happening in the world, is it predecided by Krishna?
Is everything predecided by Krishna? Yes and no. It is predecided that Krishna gives you the power to decide whatever you want to decide. And what you decide will determine your future. So if you are a foolish person, you will just, any desire you have, you just think, it's already pre-decided, so I'll just do it. There's a very good cinema at the movie theater, cinema house, so it's pre-decided that I should go there, so I will go. And there's a very nice show on television tonight, and it's pre-decided that I should watch, so why should I artificially renounce? I'm going to have to do it anyway. Or they're serving nice food at this restaurant, and it's pre-decided that I go there. Or today, it's pre-decided that I'm too tired to chant my rounds. So why should I even artificially try? Because it's pre-decided. So if you have this consciousness, then you're right. It's pre-decided that you'll remain an illusion forever. But Krishna gives you the power of free will. It's pre-decided that he gives you the independence and freedom to do the right thing, and that is called tapasya. Tapasya means to give up those things that are unfavorable for devotional service and to accept those things that are favorable for devotional service. And it is pre-decided that at every moment you have the free will to go up or down, to degrade your life or enlighten your life. That is your freedom. But Krishna knows what you're going to do, even before you do it. But he can know what you're going to do without interfering with your free will. That you cannot understand. But that is Krishna's glory. Yes?
Maharaj, everything belongs to Krishna and he is the supreme of God. So why such a complex and difficult method of appearing on this world? In the Vasudeva and Devaki, where the prison, out of gate, seven children were killed. And I appear directly and killed Kamsa.
Anyways, if you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you can set your dramatic pastimes according to your own vision. But if you are not, you should just accept that Krishna's doing perfectly. Yes? He has his perfect plan, and he is God. You may not understand the perfect plan of the Supreme Godhead, but you have to accept that it is perfect. And those great sages who deeply realize the higher truths, they understand to some extent, no one can understand in full, the glory of why Krishna does what he does. And it brings about the awakening of unlimited ecstasy in their hearts when they see how he is doing. And they are only understanding one drop in the ocean of Krishna's transcendental mercy when he appears in this world. Krishna wanted to show the fiber of the glory of Devaki and Vasudeva. He wanted to show the fiber of the glory of Bali Maharaj. And in this world, because there will be so many tests and so many difficulties we have to undergo to be Krishna conscious, we have to maintain our faith even through so many apparent reversals and disheartening situations. That's what everyone has to go through in this world to become Krishna conscious. Unless we have examples to follow, how will we have the heart to do it? So Krishna gives us such examples. His own personal associates lead the way. That is his mercy. He puts Vasudeva and Devaki into the situation, Bali Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, out of his mercy and love for you. That's how you should understand it. And also, because he wants to see the glory of these people chanted forever. If Vasudeva and Devaki didn't go through what they did, no one would concern themselves so much with them as great devotees. Yes? Nrsimhadev could have, the first time Hiranyakashipu chastised Prahlad, Nrsimhadev could have jumped out and killed him. Why did he wait? Why did he wait so long? In the meanwhile, Prahlad was tortured, blasphemed in every possible way. The first time Hiranyakashipu said, "What is the best thing you learned in school, Prahlad?" And Prahlad said, "The best thing I learned in school is that you're a demon and you should surrender to Krishna." And in essence, this is what he said. And Hiranyakashipu was very angry. At that time, Nrsimhadev could have come and torn him to pieces without Prahlad having to endure even one hair on his head being moved. Yes? But Nrsimhadev was waiting. And as he was waiting, Prahlad was being thrown in snake pits and thrown in fire and fed poison and stabbed and blasphemed and imprisoned and so many things. Then he came. But we would not be chanting the glories of Prahlad Maharaj millions of years later if Nrsimhadev would have come the first time. So he wanted to show the glories of Prahlad to the world, and he wanted to show his love for Prahlad to the world. And he also wanted to show us what example to follow in our spiritual lives. Otherwise, without examples, we'll be lost. Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, but then he came himself as Lord Chaitanya to teach us how to follow it. Unless we have devotees who are showing us the way by their example, in the present and in the past, we will not understand what it means to follow the principles of devotion. Is there another question? Yes. Back home? It is a whole long story. But yes, he takes him back home. But then Vedavyas is not bewildered by these things. He is Trikalagya. He knows this is a false Sukadeva Goswami. After all, Vedavyas wrote Srimad Bhagavatam. And in Srimad Bhagavatam it says it's a false Sukadeva Goswami. The only reason we know it's a false Sukadeva Goswami is because Vedavyas told us. But then he sent one of his disciples into the forest. And that disciple was actually chanting the slokas from the Bhagavatam. And when Sukadeva Goswami heard that, the original Sukadeva Goswami, he became very attracted, so attracted. He was Brahman realized. He had already completely merged into that consciousness of impersonal realization. But when he heard the verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam being sung, it just awakened a higher consciousness that he had never experienced before. So he went to that disciple. He was actually, some say that disciple was cutting wood. He was just cutting wood in the forest, chanting Bhagavatam slokas. But he was purposely doing it just so Sukadeva would hear, because Vedavyas was his plan. And Sukadeva was so attracted, he said, "I want to learn this Bhagavatam." So he took him back to his father, Vedavyas, and then Vedavyas systematically spoke Srimad Bhagavatam and trained Sukadeva Goswami in the principles of bhakti. And then he came out and he spoke to Maharaj Parikshit. So yes, the false Sukadeva Goswami went home for the purpose of continuing the family line. And the original Sukadeva Goswami, he continued a higher line, the line of parampara, by speaking the absolute truth. And Vedavyas understood that both purposes were fulfilled perfectly by his illustrious son. But you cannot do that. I know you would like to, but you cannot. Sometimes I have to analyze the intention of what they're what is their motives when they're asking their questions. You are concealing what you really are asking.